Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Millennial Life. My name is Joe Cole, and this is my podcast where I talk to millennials about their lives and how they are managing young adulthood. I hope everyone had a good Memorial Day weekend. I am recording this earlier than I normally would because I will be in Belmar down the shore, DTS, for Memorial Day weekend, and I will be experiencing fun and joy, hopefully. So I won't be able to do it then. So I'm recording this Thursday. So I hope everyone is doing okay. I am all right. There is a bit of sadness in my house, or there has been the past few days, because, you know, you're listening to this on Monday, but this past Wednesday, a few days ago, my family had to put our dog Raina down. She was 13 years old. She had an autoimmune disease, a skin disease that caused her to be in constant pain, and she was up throughout the night barking and crying because of it, and she was suffering, and we were suffering, having to tend to her, so we thought that it was time. But my family is handling it well. We realize that she is no longer suffering, and it's, you know, it's strange, because my brother, Ben, and I, we grew up with that dog. We got it when we were 10 years old, and it's been a constant for us. Whenever I came home from school, she'd be there from college, and it sucks that we had to do that. But, you know, sometimes in life, you got to do the shitty thing and learn how to move on. But Raina, even though you got progressively less cute throughout your life, and you barked a lot, kind of annoying, and you were kind of psychotic. You had to walk backwards on hardwood floors to prevent yourself from falling. You kind of smelled. You always invaded people's personal space by putting your wet nose in certain areas. You were my first dog, and the Cole household will not be the same without you. So rest in peace, and you'll always be remembered. But anyway, today on the show, I talked to a friend of mine from college named Frank Porzio, and I can't say enough how much I love this conversation, because Frank is a quiet guy, and I didn't really know him too well. You know, when you have someone who's your friend, but like he's not really one of your close friends, how well do you really know him, you know, or her? But I got to know him much more in this conversation, and I was pleasantly surprised by some of the things that I learned from this conversation and some of the things I learned about him and myself in the process. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So here is my conversation with Frank Porzio.
Soft-spokenness?
Yeah.
I don't know. Really don't know.
I'm a little quiet.
Yeah, you are kind of quiet.
Because I know where mine came from. I'm going to turn myself down. My whole family yells so much that anytime I am like even a little bit loud, I feel like it's bothering people.
Ah, okay.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I know exactly.
Because my family's so loud that like that whenever I'm around them, they're all yelling, and it is so annoying to me that I guess over time I just got it nurtured me to like want to be quiet, and thinking that anytime I like even raise my voice remotely, it was annoying to people.
Oh yeah, and I have a large Italian family on one side, like 20 maybe, people total.
Yeah,
super loud.
What, your dad or your
mom's? That's my mom's side. She's one of four. They all have either three or two kids. So there's 15 to 20 cousins. And then my dad's side is just my dad and his sister, who didn't have any kids. So it's a...
Are they quiet?
Small... Oh, yeah, it's real quiet. So, like, I definitely get the quiet side from my dad.
Yeah.
He really just kind of cares about what I'm having for dinner, regardless of the time.
What does that mean?
He's Italian.
Oh.
Like, we'll wake up on a Sunday morning...
Oh, so you're full Italian?
Oh, full Italian.
100%?
I'm an Italian mutt, man.
Franco Porzio.
Porzia.
Porzia. Oh, that's
it. It was an A. It was an A. And then when my grandfather came over from
why? Oh, because
Italy,
he was a man?
They misread the A and made it an O.
Oh, wow.
So like in Italy, I'm Porzia.
Is Porzia like a Like a city over there or like a town?
I don't believe so.
Like no. Corleone? Corleone from The Godfather? I was just watching The Godfather, so that's why I thought of that.
I need to rewatch. Stav
had never seen it.
I need to rewatch. It's been a while.
It's quite good.
I know. That's why I'm kind of disappointed in myself that that hasn't come about sooner.
Mm.
You might cut this out, but we can add in what we were talking about Game of Thrones the other day.
The first episode
of the new season came out. And you were saying the books are so long that
yes,
everything that happens in the show, regardless of how quick it is so vital.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, spoiler alerts for anyone who hasn't watched Game of Thrones, but we were talking about how Jon Snow died, and as they were moving his body, they panned to the snow that he was sitting in
mm-hmm.
for like 10 seconds.
Yeah. There was a part where, see, this is funny because as soon as we finished talking about that, I was in here by myself for a little bit because you guys were golfing and
yeah.
Charlie was gone. I was like looking stuff up about that, and people have talked about that, about how Barristan? What's the guy's?
I don't know. He's just the guy that was nice to the little girl.
He was Stannis Baratheon's.
Like secondhand man.
Yeah. When he finds Jon Snow's body and he moves him, he like, they take a second for him to like look at the mark that's in the ground that's like left underneath the ground, and it looks like the ground was like burnt. And listening to this now in retrospect, it might sound like, oh, there's no way you saw that as in real time as it was happening.
I know I didn't.
But when I was sitting with my brother and my friends and I was like, why does the ground look like it's burnt? What the fuck? But I've also seen stuff that people think that the shape of what was left there, the shape of the blood or the shape of whatever the mark in the ground was, kind of looked like a person on a dragon.
Yeah, I was that one person where I was watching the show like live. Well, it's pre-recorded, but
yeah.
On Sunday night or whatever.
Yeah.
And they pan to the snow and I'm like, something's up with the snow.
Yeah, because the thing is the show is so compact because they're taking from a source material that where in the book there's probably extraneous detail. In the show, there's literally every beat is important. So they wouldn't take the time because they don't have a lot of time where they have to fill out this whole long story. So like, if something's happening in the show, you can expect that there's some
it's gonna come
type
back.
Of significance to it. So they wouldn't take a precious 5 seconds, 5 seconds that is so precious to them because of this how ridiculous this story is, to have whoever that guy's name is look at the shape of what's or look at the mark that's left in the snow if it doesn't have some type of
significance.
Yeah, but it is cool, man.
It is cool. Amen.
What a fucking show, huh?
It is. It is indeed. If I wasn't a business person, film might have been my my calling.
Yeah. Did you ever think about that?
I don't know. I've been a technology guy for a little while. I worked in the tech center. I was the tech center kid.
Oh yeah, you're a computer dude, huh?
I'm a computer dude.
What are you doing with your life?
I don't know. what my title is.
You gave me one of your business cards.
I did.
I was like, I don't need this. You were like, please take one.
I got
printed out.
I got 500 printed out for free. I have no one to give them to, so I just give them to my friends.
Oh, it's so funny.
Basically, I am an IT auditor.
What does that mean?
I still don't know what it means, to be honest.
Oh, no. So boring, Frank.
It is kind of boring. But basically, I just look at IT applications that are used by large corporations to make sure that we can trust the information that's coming out of it, so that when people like you all listening invest in the companies, you can trust the financial statements that are published.
Wow.
So you're welcome.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't lead an interesting life, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, have you ever seen Mr. Robot?
I have not.
You got to watch that if you're a computer guy.
You need to send me a list of movies that I need to
watch.
It's
a show, Frank.
Okay, fine.
You got to watch
movies, shows, cinema.
It's about like a really strange, socially awkward, maybe autistic
on the spectrum.
Like on the spectrum kid. I mean, he's a kid, he's 20 something. I think the actor who plays him in real life is in his early 30s, but I don't know if that's how old he's supposed to be in the show. But he works for a corporation, or he works for like a technology security company that like is like the tech security for like a large corporation that is referred to in the show as Evil Corp, but like that's just what he calls it. So it's what everyone calls it.
This show just recently came out, didn't it? I remember seeing it.
And it's about how he like he's pretty much like a misanthrope, and he hates humanity, and he hates like modern politics, and he hates wealth. He's pretty much Bernie Sanders' wet dream. He hates wealth inequality. He thinks people are being screwed by the system. It's all about like the top 1%. And it's about his like plan to have some type of revolution to
against it.
Yeah, to make sure that the wealth is redistributed to people. But yeah, so like he's like kind of like a vigilante because he uses his ability, his tech ability to like pretty much hack into people's like personal lives and like find out people who are doing like evil things and expose them. So like the first scene is like him meeting with like a person who has like child pornography on his computer, and he's like, "I know what the fuck you're doing," and he calls the cops on him. It's fucking great.
Who are those hackers that were the
Anonymous?
Yeah, those guys.
Is that the name of the group that's in the show? Because it's literally based on them.
Yeah, they were.
What's the name?
Yeah, I can't remember the name, but they wear the V for Vendetta masks.
Yeah. It's literally based on them.
Yeah,
but it's good stuff. You should watch it.
Oh.
So how are you doing with this commute, Frank? You drive.
Hey man, it was a struggle at first.
Yeah.
I started work back in July. So I've been there for 9 months now, I think, right?
Yeah.
So back in July, I had to go into the office a lot more. I'm a technically consultant, so I kind of go to client sites, and I'm visiting client sites, not really going to the home office all that often. Mm-hmm. But the first client I was on was down in Stanford. So I was commuting up from Hamden, which is north of New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
So the commute is an hour on a good day with no traffic.
Eesh.
Yeah. Yep. Your voice says it all there.
Mm-hmm.
So in the morning I was leaving the house good 6 a.m, wouldn't get into work until like 8:30 some days. And then I was working like a dog until about 8 in the office. Wasn't
8
getting home.
PM?
Yeah, man.
Why are you there that late? That long?
Work. Also, I didn't know what I was doing at first. So it's a combination of large amounts of work with no intelligence of the work that I was doing.
Mm.
So a menial task that could have taken me an hour took me 3. So you could ask the rest of the guys that I'm living with. I was not a happy boy.
For a while there?
Oh, yeah.
How long did that last?
That was a few months, honestly. Like 3 or 4 months. And then kind of got my feet under me. And just kind of went from there.
People who have recently graduated college or people who are about to graduate college may be in a situation like that. What is your advice for people to like get through that that big of a commute and that in a situation where maybe it's not ideal?
I think most of it is enjoying the time that you have when you're not working.
Yeah.
So I'll reflect back on that. I was even working weekends when I was first starting.
Yeah,
man. I was working like 7 days a week. Just because I had work to do, there was deadlines and stuff, so I needed to put in the time. But I think the most important thing is to just kind of relax,
mm-hmm.
talk to people if you need help.
Mm-hmm.
The people in the office, they're there to help you. They don't want you to fail. And just kind of go from there. Be willing to reach out.
Mm-hmm.
I communicated to the people I was working with that it was a struggle. They understood that the commute was pretty shitty. So they kind of said to me like, hey, once you get your feet under you, once you're able to produce work at like a high level, feel free to work from home on Fridays as long as you're still working. So like 6 months in, I was getting like different awards for the work I was doing. I got a couple like monetary awards from senior managers and like executives for recognizing that I was putting in the hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then honestly, the last time that I've had to go down to Stanford was Thursday, a couple weeks ago. It had been 3 months since I've had to drive down there.
Anymore?
I've been working from home a good amount.
Why?
Because I'm good at what I do.
They just let you?
Yeah, basically. Basically, the way when I was interviewing at this company, they were like, explaining to me how they're super flexible with hours and everything. And they were like, yeah, as long as you don't fuck me, you can do whatever you want, basically. So he, one of the managers said it. He was like, yeah.
As long as you can help make sure that we're making money.
Yeah, basically. And they're a big four accounting firm. So they're doing well. They really don't need me because for me to be in there, they have 10 other people trying to grab my spot.
Working from home must be amazing.
Oh, it's nice. It gets a little challenging.
To like keep up the work.
Oh, yeah. I have to kind of force myself to zone in going to work. Because mm-hmm. if I'm sitting in my bedroom, I see my bed 2 feet away.
See Netflix over there. Oh,
see the Netflix, see the Xbox. It's kind of challenging to keep on task. But it's nice because I'll wake up at like 8:30 in the morning mm-hmm. and I'm working at 8:35. So it's no hour and a half commute.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Like I'm done at work at 6. I'm done with work. You're I don't here. Have to drive home. Yeah.
That's amazing. I didn't know you got to do that.
Yeah.
Why? What is the situation in which you have to go there?
So if we have meetings with the client, mm-hmm. We'll have to go in. We'll talk to them. If I'm meeting with, so I work with people from New York often. Mm-hmm. So if the team is based out of New York, I'll take the train down, go to New York for a day, mm-hmm. kind of sit with them. But a lot of people work remote. And they're just kind of wherever, just set up calls. I have like daily status calls with the person I'm working with just to make sure that we kind of stay on task with everything. But mm-hmm. everyone appreciates my duties and mm-hmm. my work that
well,
I put in.
I'm sure. See, this is interesting to me because dealing with like a lot of stress, you seem like a very calm, like, you can just put away the bullshit easily and just focus in on what's important. And I'm sure that probably has to do a lot with the arduous lifestyle that you had before college.
You went there, Joe, didn't you?
Do you like that transition?
No, that was a great transition, honestly.
Is that true? And do you want to explain honestly, what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So I did not have an easy go of high school, per se. So I guess it was sophomore year of high school, playing baseball, was playing like freshman baseball. We had three teams. So we had a freshman team, a JV and a varsity team. Mm-hmm. Made the freshman team, no problem. Made the JV team, no problem.
Sophomore year.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So I'm playing baseball, we're doing like fall ball, we're doing all this stuff. And, I was catching at the time. Mm-hmm. So you're a lot of squatting, a lot mm-hmm. of moving around. And I eventually started to get like a pain kind of in my quad. So I'm like, all right, I'm catching all the time. It's just because I'm squatting. I pulled a muscle. So eventually I just like kind of go PT, going for a few months, thinking that it's like a muscle sprain. Mm-hmm. PT is going to help. It didn't help. Mm-hmm. So eventually they were like, all right, you should probably go get an x-ray. See if it's something weird. I don't think it will be, but it could be. And needless to say, it was. So they found like a mass on my left femur. So immediately, that was January of sophomore year of high school.
15 years old, 16?
14.
14?
I'm young.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I have a late birthday. Mm-hmm. So I was young. So I was
You're still 14. 22? Yeah.
I'm still 22. So I was 14 at the time. And February, so like, right around midterms for high school, which was like a big deal at my school, I like had a peace out. I left school middle of the year.
Well, what is the degree? Like when you decide you have to peace out, like what is it that you know fully
about? Oh, yeah. Oh, that, yeah. I skipped a couple of weeks. Apologies, Joe.
No, it's okay. I don't know if I've even heard this story
yeah,
before.
Yeah, I don't share the story with many people.
Now you are.
Yeah. Now everyone's going to know. So at first they didn't really know to what degree the cancer was at that point. Mm-hmm. They didn't know if it was benign, malignant, mm-hmm. so have it. So this is like a 2-week process where I'm getting MRIs, bone scans, like biopsies, different biopsies. So I had to get basically what a biopsy is. They go in. They'll go into the site and they'll cut a piece of the mass out and run tests on it to see to what degree of cancer it is.
Like stage, is that what they mean?
I don't know. Stage, I was 14. I was kind of just blocking everything out. I was like, I just want to play baseball, man. So they're telling me, well, I'm like,
put the mitt back on.
Basically. Yeah. So I was just like, all right, well, I'm on crutches now.
Yeah.
So I've been on crutches since February. Keep that in mind for a later point. So now they're coming back at me and they're like, yeah, so we don't know if it's benign or malignant yet.
Mm-hmm.
So they send it off to like three places. So now me and my family are sitting there for like a couple weeks trying to figure out if I am going to have chemo or if I'm just going to have a surgery and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're like, all right, well, there's benign pieces of it, but there's also a little bit malignant like cells in there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, we suggest you get chemotherapy.
Right.
I'm like, as a 14-year-old in high school, I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, what the hell did I do to kind of deserve this fate, per se? Which, in retrospect, made me who I am today.
Mm.
But anyways, so I guess it's February now. I get my surgery. So basically what my surgery encompassed was them going into my left leg, pulling out my femur, which for those medical people out there, strongest bone in the body.
Breaking your femur is like the most painful thing, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. So now they go in there, cut my femur out of my leg.
Ugh.
Yep. Surgery is not a pretty thing.
Ugh.
So this is like a 5 or 6 hour surgery that they're doing. So as a 14-year-old kid, I come out of this 6 hour surgery with a metal rod sticking into my hip. It's prosthetic. I refer to it as a rod because it's funny. but I have my own hip because my, like the side hip, it's actually the hip. The femur is what goes into the hip. It's like a little ball. So I don't have the ball going down into my knee area. So that whole femur is gone.
Really?
Yeah, man.
I didn't know that.
I have a foot long scar on the side of my leg.
I don't know if I've seen it. Maybe we'll get a little more familiar later.
I think that's a little.
So you have no bone in your left leg.
I have
no
a little
bone.
Piece of bone. So if you were to be sitting down with your legs just flat on the floor,
go from the
knee up, I have about 3 inches of bone.
Mm.
And then they put something in that for the prosthetic to go into, and then it goes all the way up.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was that. So that was the February portion.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, we have to go through the whole rigmarole of, do you want to finish school?
I love the word rigmarole.
Oh, it's fantastic. It needs to be used more.
I also like brouhaha.
Oh, what is that from?
I think it's from Step Brothers. I've heard Will Ferrell say it a few times.
It's a Will Ferrell thing.
Yeah.
That's fine with me. But anyway, my parents kind of sit me down. They're like, what do you want to do at school?
Mm.
I'm like, I'm not getting left back.
Yeah.
All my friends are sophomores. Like, I'm coming back to school junior year. So they tell me this whole chemo thing's like 9 months, whatever.
This whole chemo thing.
Didn't have to do radiation, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a 9-month ordeal, basically. So now, this time in February, 9 months would be September, which is when school was starting. So I go, I'm going to finish school, and I'm going to be back to school for junior year.
You kept going to school that year, too?
So what had happened, I wasn't able to go back to my high school, but the public school that was on Staten Island at the time, they had like a homeschool program where someone would come in after I had gotten home from chemo to like teach me.
So you had like,
so I had a homeschooling.
Mm-hmm. Teach me, quote unquote, meaning it was not nearly what normal school would
be. Honestly, that guy hooked me up. really only came on Fridays. So the chemo was literally like a 9-to-5 job.
Oh, God.
I would get up at like 7 in the morning with my mom or my dad at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And like they kind of scheduled their weeks around who was taking me. So I would get up at like 7. We'd drive in, be in the hospital by like 7:45 and just stay there until like 6.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Monday through Thursday. And then maybe would have had to come in on Friday, depending on how I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a day-to-day thing. Honestly, for that nine-month period, I slept 15 hours a day.
Really?
every day. I kind of felt bad for my mom and dad. They would kind of try to talk to me, and I'm just like, turn over, roll over, throw my iPod in.
So how was chemo?
Not fun.
Mm.
But from what I was like hearing, because it was a day hospital, so there was other rooms around, and like from what I was hearing, I was pretty okay
compared to other people.
Oh yeah, like honestly, you see shows like 50, Breaking 50, Bad, yeah, and like all these shows where people are going through chemo and they're like heads in the toilet 95% of the time.
Mm.
I threw up one time.
Really?
One time, and it wasn't even from the chemo. I'm convinced I was on antibiotics for my surgery, but wasn't eating. So it just like ate at my stomach.
Mm.
So I did okay. Prior to surgery, I was like 130 pounds. Like once I got out, by the end of the 9 month period, I was 180 something pounds.
Whoa.
Yeah. I put on like 40, 50 pounds because the doctors and my parents, they were like, the kid's eating, feed him. So I was eating like pizza, I was eating calzones, I was just eating McDonald's all the time.
No way.
Yeah, and I wasn't moving. I was on crutches the whole time, so I wasn't really performing any physical activity.
Yeah, J-Soul gained weight, he said.
Yeah. If you don't get sick, you're putting on water weight, you're putting on food weight, because anyone that wants you to be well is gonna feed you, especially coming from an Italian family.
Mm-hmm.
Food.
Mm.
Food above all.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, throughout that whole thing, I was, like, doing classes, and for anyone in New York, we had Regents exams.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to take 3 Regents exams that year. I had to take a chemistry, I had to take a math, and I had to take a history one or something.
Right.
Something stupid like that. And, like, I'm not a stupid person. I'm relatively intelligent, I would like to think. So I'm basically teaching myself all this stuff so that these people, when they do come in to my house to teach me, I'm like done with the work and I'm ahead of everything.
Right.
So now these Regents exams are like 2.5-hour, 3-hour tests that you're supposed to be in school taking, but they had to have someone come into my home to sit with me while I took this exam so that they can take it, and it's like privacy, all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, I'm like killing these exams again, like 90s, got like a 76 on like the chem, which was the lowest grade I have ever gotten.
Wow.
In chemistry. But like I only had half a year of chemistry under my belt because no one taught me chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of like taught myself. So anyway, finished school, got all my grades. Good. Sophomore year is good. So now it's at the point where it's the summer and I'm like, all right, I got 3 months. I got like 2 more cycles of this stuff left and I'll be good. Like no setback so far. I was like, I'm going back to school in September for my junior year. So anyway, get through it. And I miss like 1 week of junior year of high school.
Wow.
Come back and I'm like right in it. Still on crutches.
Mm-hmm.
Still bald as hell.
Really?
Oh yeah, picked it.
How
no
do people?
Eyebrows, no
what,
eyelashes.
What are friends and like people in school treating you differently? Or
so?
And how are your parents throughout all this? How was your family?
I think as a 14-year-old child,
yeah,
wasn't really paying attention to that kind of stuff.
Really?
Kind of retrospectively, dad was kind of so about it. He was freaking out in terms of like medical things. Great insurance. I think they covered 99% of it, which
wow,
is sweet.
Mm.
my mom.
If only Walter White had that, we would have had
no issue.
Breaking
no
Bad would have been a lot.
Yeah, it would have been like
boring
one season
of a show.
It wouldn't have been a show. Yeah, but my mom was stressing about it. Obviously,
mm-hmm.
She would like take quote unquote walks around the hospital to get fresh air, i.e., put nicotine and tobacco in her lungs.
It's so weird when I understand that a family, it's a part of you, and I don't know your parents, so yeah. I'm not saying this about them, but I've just seen families where the person who's dealing with it the best is the person who has cancer, who has the cancer.
I think that was kind of the case where it was.
Anyway.
Yeah, so honestly, when I had left school, told a couple people, like a couple people on my baseball team, like a few of my friends from like my classes, because I was in like the honors program. So we kind of stuck with the same 40 people throughout each class time. So I told a couple of them. Everyone else in the high school was just like, didn't know who I was when I came back, because I just like disappeared. I was like kind of a ghost at that point.
Wow.
So I think that's kind of where it all started, where I don't share this per se story.
What does that mean?
I just don't like people in my shit, I guess.
Yeah.
It was like tough for me to fathom at the time, so I didn't want to burden other people with my like faults and like my
you don't know what's going on, so why share your Dude, that is the same thing with where I'm at right now.
Yeah?
It's like, part of me is like, I mean, it's obviously not to the degree of what you had to experience, but it's like, I'm in a situation where I don't know what's next and what I'm doing really, and I'm trying to figure it out, and I'm learning as it's happening to me.
Yeah.
And that has kind of made me not want to interact with as many people or see, like when sometimes when I'm out and I see someone who I kind of know, and they don't see me, I just like won't go up to them because I know they'll be like, what are you doing?
And you don't want to say.
And I don't want to because I don't know. So why do I want to share with you that I don't know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And then,
so I'm sure like you being in this situation where you're like scared and you don't know what's going on. You don't know if you'll be okay.
Exactly.
Why do you want to let people into that?
Yeah, exactly. Like you can go back in my Facebook. I'm like missing like a year of my life.
Yeah.
So I refuse to take pictures. I refuse.
Wow.
Yeah. Like there's maybe like one or two pictures floating out there of like me with no hair kind of deal where I just kind of like block this portion of my life out, but it made me who I am today.
Well, you're on the other side of that. So maybe you can help me now. Do you feel as if, what are your thoughts on that now? Do you think you should have burdened people? Do you think you should have let people in? Or do you think that's something you should have dealt with yourself?
It's kind of tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's two different situations, but me as a person, and I think me and you are pretty similar in that regard where we don't like to burden other people with, I'm not going to say like menial things, but like to me that was... It was a big deal, but like other people didn't understand at that time.
Don't want to burden other people with our shit.
With exactly. So like kind of internalize everything and deal with it yourself before going to someone else and asking for advice.
I can't say enough that what I'm dealing with is not nearly as bad as what you're dealing with. Because I'm not even dealing with anything. I'm just dealing with life. You're
with
dealing
life.
With something that's life or death. Like.
Yeah, kind of. but yeah, it was kind of weird because I came back to school. And I was just
trying
like,
to pretend like nothing
happened. Yeah, I was trying to pretend as if nothing happened.
But meanwhile, you're on crutches, you're bald, and you're 50 pounds heavier.
Exactly. Like a lot of shit went on.
Yeah.
But like taking that into college, I didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
You didn't know.
No.
No one knew. I shared it with.
What's this kid with the limp doing?
Yeah. Basically, I was the kid with the limp.
Yeah.
And they were just, I just like didn't share it. I told my roommates like 7 months into school.
Really? Masiya didn't know until that long?
Masiya didn't know. I don't think he even still knows. I just kind of told him I had hip surgery.
Yeah.
I kept it very vague. And I think like kind of as I progressed through college. I got closer friends that allowed me to kind of share, and I kind of internalized, and I was like, oh, that thing happened to me. Kind of made me who I am today as to why I'm so kind of reserved and just to myself, and like
really?
People see it as shy. I'm just like, in college as like a freshman, you hear people complaining about like, oh, I have like 3 exams tomorrow. I have a couple papers to do. And I'm just kind of sitting there like, you have no fucking idea. I was like, just do the fucking work and you're good. This is nothing. So like, it was more frustrating for me hearing people's like, bullshit it was to me kind of deal.
Is that, you think that that's what I talked about, like Joey with that is obviously he's in a shitty situation.
Oh, way worse than me.
That's ongoing, and we talk about this idea of hardship being relative.
Oh, for sure.
And does that, I talked to him about this thing that happened to Stephen Colbert when he was a kid. You know Stephen Colbert?
Yeah,
I know. When he was a kid, his dad and two of his brothers died in a plane accident, and that kind of just gave him this mentality going throughout high school. Like, he was like, why do I have to take this test? Like, what is the, he said everything seemed like nothing was like important, kind of. And did that happen to you? Or was like,
I think
you experienced the worst, so like everything else like seems like a joke, kind of.
Everything is definitely relative. So what is terrible for someone else is just another day. For another person. And for me, I think coming out of that situation, what had happened to me was I don't plan very far in the future. So whereas some people in high school are like, oh, in 20 years, I'm going to be doing this, this, and this. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to be doing in 2 months from now. Like, yes, I want to go to college. Okay. Applied to school. Where do I want to go after graduation? Who fucking knows? That's 4 years away.
Wow, yeah. Type deal. I get way ahead of myself.
Yeah. So like, I think that's what kind of, I like compartmentalize. Yes, that's the word.
I react, and exist as if things that I hope or want to happen have already happened. Does that make sense?
Say that again.
I like act throughout my life based on things that haven't happened, but that like I assume
you
will happen.
Had assumed will happen.
Or like, you know what I'm saying?
So you're planning 3 steps ahead, waiting for the first step to happen.
Yeah. Assuming that it will or won't, or something will happen is just not good.
Where I kind of take things, I guess, more as they come. So even like,
you're immediate. You're in the moment more.
Yeah, I'm more in the moment, which...
which is amazing, which is, I've talked to Stav about that.
Yeah. And I guess it's hard for people to see it that way. Or like, they see me as shy, per se. Like, if we're in a room of people and you're like at a concert, you see 20,000 phones in the air, like Snapchatting this and like recording it. I'm watching the show.
You're existing.
Yeah, I'm watching the show. And that just reminds me of... It was like a meme or something on Twitter I saw. And it was like a old lady sitting on like a rail. I don't know if you've ever seen this. And it's at a parade. It's like an 80-year-old woman sitting on the rail, and then there's 20-year-old kids all recording it. And it's just like, live in the moment, because your phone isn't going to remember this stuff. But yeah, so I kind of took that through college.
That's why I hate taking pictures.
Dude, I refuse to be in pictures.
There's a great line. I've said this on the podcast before in Up in the Air, called "Pictures are for people who can't remember."
Yeah.
And when you take a picture, it's like, feel like most of the time you're taking a picture in a situation to try to commemorate the situation is like, now I'm going to remember how annoying it was that we had to take this picture. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. We had to take 10 minutes out of what we were doing.
Yeah.
We needed to take a picture of what we were doing.
So when you get back to school junior year, is the rest, are you cancer free from that point on?
Yeah. So at that point, it was like,
how was the rest
monthly,
of high school?
Monthly checkups.
Mm.
It was monthly checkups for a year. And then after that, it went to 3-month intervals for a year. And then it went to 6-month intervals for a year. And then it went to yearly checkups. So it's still not over, type deal.
Really?
Yeah, like I'm still going to the doctors, still going to the surgeon. Like, I have to take days off of work and stuff like that to go to the doctor. But
do you have one around here? Or do you got to go home?
I go into New York, Sloan Kettering.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, back to your question about going back into, like, junior year, I just kind of, like, picked up where I left off type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just started hanging out with people that I was staying in contact with, like, my good friends that were still on the island. Mm-hmm. I would go hang out with them.
So, once you get to the end of high school, when you're thinking about going to college, are you afraid of, like, something like this happening again? Is that in the back of your mind when deciding to go?
I think it was more so...
And what were you hoping for college to be?
In terms of the question regarding, like, is it in the back of my mind? Yes, it was always in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I would say a few years after. Like, probably 3 or 4 years. So it was kind of into the college realm of... I was still kind of worrying about it, which didn't allow for me to, I guess, like, open up and share it with people, because if it were to happen again, who would I tell?
Right.
Type of deal. What was your first question again?
The second question was, what were you hoping college would be? Was it a blank slate because no one knew that of you? Were you looking forward to that?
Yeah, I think I was. I had a feeling it would come up.
Mm.
I just didn't know
when and how.
Mm-hmm. So, like, obviously the orientation thing, I didn't share it.
Really?
I kind of just said I had hip surgery in, like, high school.
Really?
And, like, for other people that were on Joe's show, orientation leaders, we do this thing, like, diversity.
Yeah.
So Joe could explain it a little bit better.
Orientation, there's orientation leaders who are people in college who orient, are the ambassadors of the new freshmen coming into school, and there's, like, sessions, and then there's a part during the orientation session where all the groups meet together and we talk about certain things that have shaped us, made us who we were, and they can really talk about anything they want, but sometimes
it gets
heavy because orientation leaders love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, no, I wasn't one of those people either. I was like,
Yeah, I was like, just.
I don't really have one significant life-changing moment. Maybe I do, but.
You just don't realize it yet.
Maybe it's repressed. But anyway, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, going into college, I was kind of hoping for, like, a blank slate, per se.
Mm-hmm.
New friends, new experiences, all this type of stuff. But at the same time, I was nervous because I was like, oh, what are people. How are people going to take this?
Because
you're coming from a high school mentality where someone hears that and they're just like, oh, that's a cool joke kind of deal. And freshman year of college, you're still high school mentality, regardless of who you think you are or who you actually
are.
You're
literally like a fish in a bowl.
Yeah.
It's like, what is going on?
Exactly. So everyone's trying to find themselves, and I was caught in that same situation. And you knew me freshman year. I was super quiet. I would just kind of hang out with a couple people and would just go about my life, basically. And then I guess sophomore year, I kind of made the leap into joining SIGEP and, like, rushing and everything. And it was a struggle at first because the whole process is talking to people. And I don't talk to people. So just doing that alone was...
This is a big step for you right
was,
now, right?
Oh, yeah. That was like a leap of faith getting pushed off the cliff type of deal.
Yeah.
But eventually, like, some of my best friends have come out of that organization. And I've kind of realized that, like, the people that care about you will be willing to listen and do everything for you to make sure that you feel comfortable
with
where you're at in life and... your own personal being in terms of, like, complacency with work, school, friends type deal.
So what did college and you accepting that and what was ultimately realized and how it all shaped you coming out of college?
So I've gotten a few comments from people where there's obviously been people who have kind of dealt with the same ordeal as me, but they share it with everyone.
Right.
And they make it like a social media event. I've told maybe 10 people this entire story.
Right.
And I've come across hundreds of people. So I keep it internalized, like I was saying before. Like, I keep it to myself. If someone really wants to know, sure, have at it. And I think I kind of realized that where, I think it was around sophomore year, it was like, who I am is because of what had happened to me in high school. So there's no reason for me to hide it from anyone.
How is that who you are?
It changed my mentality, a lot of things. To be honest, I don't remember. I was always a shy kid,
mm-hmm.
but I was always willing to share with people.
Mm.
After that point, I was kind of
less willing.
Yeah, I was like, I'm gonna deal with it myself.
Mm-hmm.
If I really need help, I'll go to that person. And I became very independent. I was a grown-up in a 14-year-old's body at that point, where, like, the little things in life didn't bother me. Like, I hear my friends complaining about, like, homework. And I'm just like, just do the homework. It'll go away. Like,
yeah.
But, like, in that regard, where I've just chosen to kind of be more of the listener for everyone, where I will give advice to people and I will share the story if I feel that it would help who I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather have someone come to me. I enjoy helping people. That's kind of my like domain. Mm. I like, if someone were to come to me with something, I'm very open to helping. Like, I would drop a lot.
So it made you more selfless.
I would think so. Yeah. I'm willing to kind of drop things to help other people.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Joe knows.
Yeah, you are. Yesterday, someone was like, you want to bring me to the train station? And he was like, yeah, I'll do it. Like, let me know. And I was like, I wouldn't do that. Like,
I wouldn't do that for my mom.
Yeah, I was just like, wow, you just like, beat of the hat, like no questions asked. Drop of the hat, beat of the hat, drop of the hat, no questions asked.
Beat of the drum?
Beat of the drum, yeah, I think.
Maybe.
I just.
Maybe, I don't know. We
combined two sayings.
Yeah, but.
That's amazing. Yeah, Funny People. Have you ever seen that movie, Funny People?
Yeah, Funny People.
That movie is about Judd Apatow. He's the guy who directed and wrote the movie. He said he learned that because there was a high executive in a company for television or for a movie company or movie studio, whatever, like a studio exec who like got cancer and then he recovered and then he came back and he's like, you know what this made me realize? It made me realize that we can be number one. Meaning, like, all he cared about was his business. And Judd Apatow was like, wow, you learned nothing from a near-death experience. Like, you you did not change or grow in a positive way at all. So that's what that movie's about, is like, what if there's someone who thinks they're going to die but doesn't? And then how does that change them? Does it change them at all? Are they still just a bad person? Yeah. What if it changes them just a little bit? But I guess it changed you in the way of realizing that...
everything really isn't about me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, so you finished college. What were you expecting post college? How you would be able to handle post college, and how's that changed?
Honestly,
were you like most afraid of, like with real life?
I still live in the college town.
Yeah, that's true.
So I
talked about it with Charlie. I was like, if I lived here and was by Quinnipiac but not going to Quinnipiac every day, I would be crying.
Yeah, it was rough at first because I'm living with three people in grad school.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Charlie are working. So we were getting up, going to work, coming home, and we were kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
And we had like no responsibilities until the next morning, whereas the other guys are doing homework or just hanging out because Tom does nothing.
Tom has like three classes.
Yeah, Tom has three classes, a few online classes. Right. So he really doesn't have to leave the house all that often. But yeah, I mean... I knew I had a job February of senior year, so I was thoroughly enjoying those last 4 or 5 months of school,
right,
and the environment of Quinnipiac and senior year of college. And then kind of like June rolled around and I had no idea where I was going.
Right.
I was just like, oh, I'm working.
Mm.
And I didn't know what I was doing. Like I had said earlier,
mm-hmm,
I didn't know what the job was. I was just kind of going to work. and I was just kind of figuring out as it came. So I think that was the hardest part for me, was like, if you're a writer, you know you're going to be writing. If you're a salesman, you know you're going to be doing sales. I was in the risk advisory program. That can mean anything.
Right.
So I was just kind of going from there. I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing, A, for work, or B, with my life in the next couple years. So it was a weird transition of getting out of the school mentality of, yeah, I can do work at midnight and be good.
Being comfortable with learning, needing to learn how to be comfortable with like the open road of like...
Yeah, I think...
Of the unknown.
Yeah, where even like the first couple of days of work, people are like, oh, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I don't know. Well, working.
I don't plan for the future. I'm in the moment, man.
Yeah,
don't you
I'm
know
in
me?
The moment. What do you expect? Yeah. And I'm like... Just meeting these people in training in Atlanta, I'm not going to tell them my life story.
Right.
Going back to it, like,
I
don't know who
you are. Atlanta?
Yeah, we went to Atlanta right outside of Buckhead.
Yeah.
So we would go out at night and go into Buckhead, go to the bars.
Mm.
That was training. But we were in like the classroom from 8 until like 6. So they let us go out for dinner and stuff. So. Mm. That's cool. But yeah, we were in training for a week, and then I just kind of got thrown right into it the first week of August.
Mm.
And that's when the...
So how's it been? Well, now that you don't have to commute, it's not
yeah,
as bad.
Yeah, first couple months were brutal, but then kind of just rolled from there. A lot of the clients that I was going to are in Hartford, or there's a couple in like Oxford. I was on and one in New Haven, so I was commuting 20 to 45 minutes, no traffic, which is a normal commute for people. And then the Stanford trip came.
Yeah,
and that was brutal. But like I was saying, they appreciate the work
yeah.
I was doing. They don't really, they're pretty lenient in terms of like when you get in, as long as you get your work done. So I started kind of coming in later. I would leave the house at like 8:15, so I'd get to sleep.
Right.
I'd get into work at 9:30, and then I was staying until 6:30 anyway. And I was getting 8-9 hours of work done throughout the day. So they were just like, do what you gotta do, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's your life. Like, we're not gonna tell you how to live it type deal.
Yeah.
Which is comforting, knowing that the people that you're working for actually
relatively
care about you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, work was a transition. But I think I'm on that path of still don't know what I want to do, whether it's go back to school, continue work.
Yeah, so we usually end with like a hopes for the future thing, long-term, short-term, mm-hmm. personal, professional. Do you have anything in mind?
Hopes for the future. So I was actually went back to the school the other day for my major's capstone presentations. The professor, like the head of the department, emailed business professionals, i.e. me, weird, I've only been working 9 months, but I'm a business professional,
mm-hmm.
To come back and kind of listen to these student presentations. Anyway, whatever, listen to these presentations, let me go over to Eli's for a couple drinks. And I'm talking to one of the professors, and I was like, yeah, I don't really know what I want to do. Like, I don't know if I want to go back to school. I kind of want to teach
mm-hmm.
at one point. He was like, honestly, do what you want to do. And it kind of has me thinking more. So for myself, in terms of like aspirations, I personally just want to be happy.
Right.
So I will do anything in my power to be happy,
mm-hmm.
whether that is going back to school to get a PhD to teach, or continue working and making money for the time being until I find something else that I want to do. Like I said, I don't really plan for the future that much. So my 5-year plan, I would like to probably be in Boston and working. 10-year plan, who knows? Mm. But for anyone listening, I would just kind of go with stick to your guns, stick to your gut. you know you best. So kind of just think to yourself for a little bit. Don't make any rash decisions, but make the decision that'll make you ultimately happy in the end. And that's my little tidbit for all of you.
Oh, Tammy's calling me.
Uh-oh.
Hold on one second. Tammy?
Hi.
I'm interviewing Frank right now. We're going to be done in like 5 minutes. Can I call you back right after? Okay, thanks. I'm interviewing Tammy after.
Min-Tam.
Min-Tam. So, are you afraid of getting older, like physically?
Dude, I'm already a 75-year-old in a 22-year-old body. I've had two hip surgeries. And
yeah. How do you work out? Do you work out still? Do you keep?
Yeah, yeah. I still work out. I go to the gym. I mostly do upper body stuff, but I do like the elliptical and I do the bike.
Can you run? Not really.
So, yeah. So after I got the surgery, the doctor literally tells me, he goes, if you want that hip for more than 10 years, the only time I want you running is if someone is chasing you.
No way.
Yeah. So I haven't run since I was 14.
No way.
Yeah. So the extent of my running is like the elliptical or the, like a bike is the most like leg workout I get.
Wow.
Yeah. But I do like arms, back, biceps, upper body stuff. I do try to go to the gym. Going to the gym while working is not easy. But kind of squeeze it in there every once in a while. But yeah.
Do you ever live with the fear? Sorry if this is a negative question, but do you ever live with the fear that it's going to come back?
No. I think because of how everything goes and has like affected my mentality of everything, if it happens, it happens.
Right.
I'm not going to plan for it to happen again. I'm not going to worry about it happening again until it becomes a possibility. Like right now, I know I'm going to have to get another surgery because that metal ball is wearing down on my hip. So I'm going to have to get a full hip replacement at some point.
No way. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, am I going to worry about having to do chemo again? Am I going to worry about cancer? No. I kind of just push it to the back of my head. I know it's a possibility, but I never considered it like an inevitability. So I kind of separate the two. Two different situations.
That was my mom.
Oh, how's she doing?
She said, hope your interviews are going well today. Just let me know when you're getting on the road. Love you.
Well, mom, I'm in the middle of one.
Yeah, right? Stupid.
No.
But do you want to have a kid? Kids and a wife? And how do you deal with that?
I do, but I don't know if I can.
Why?
Chemo. Infertility possibilities.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
You haven't gotten those bad boys checked?
I have not had the time to go, no.
Dude, we should go.
I know, I need to
go. I'd go with you.
that's weird, man. that's a whole new level of friendship that I don't know if we're ready for.
Company, not like while it's going on, just like I'll wait in the waiting room.
Outside the door?
I'll go in the waiting room, make sure you're okay.
But like I know you're
You need any lotion, Frank? Can I get you a magazine?
Prefer videos.
Oh, yeah. They just go with the old memory sometimes, you know?
The spank bank.
Yeah. And that's how we're going to end it.
Oh, beautiful.
Well, Frank, is your full name Francis?
No, it's Frank.
It's just Frank.
I'm just a Frank.
My middle name's Francis.
Oh, that's weird.
JFK, though.
I kind of feel bad. FDR.
You're FDR?
No.
Oh, you're FP.
Does anyone? I'm FTP.
FTP.
My name is... I was going for a new girl joke for anyone that listens.
Oh, I don't watch New Girl. I should. There's so many shows to watch.
We're going to send each other a list of shows and movies.
I know the shows that I need to watch.
Fine.
That was a really, really, really arrogant.
That was snood.
That was snood. I meant it that way.
All right, Joe, you could get out of my house now.
Okay, I'll fucking leave. Well, I'll see you later, Frank.
Yeah.
There it is. Good stuff, right? I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Thank you, Frank, for coming on my podcast and telling your story, even though you don't tell it to that many people. I really appreciate it. And thank you to everyone who's listened.
We'll have another episode next week. I have a few more episodes. I have a few more interviews with people that I visited from when I went to Quinnipiac. I have an episode with Ben Saad, who I stayed out with in LA. And I have some emails out to people that I hope to be interviewing soon. So I'm going to keep on doing this. Please subscribe to That Millennial Life on iTunes. Leave a review or a rating. Join the Facebook page. Like the Facebook page. Yeah, like the Facebook page, That Millennial Life. Follow me on Twitter at That Mill Life. And yeah, I hope everyone had a good Memorial Day weekend. And I will talk to you guys next week. So long.